Well, Shanti, thanks for joining us today on The Connection. We're really glad you could be with us.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Okay, you've written a bunch of books, and one of them in particular, For Women Only. That's what I want to focus on at first, and I want to look at a couple of chapters. In the first chapter, which you call Light Bulbs On, you have a little call out that says, How I Woke Up to What I Didn't Know About Men. And you write about working on a second novel that you were writing, and something came to your mind that turned that light bulb on. Would you tell us that story?
Yeah, sure. I basically, one of the main characters in this novel that I was writing, one of the main people, was a guy. You know, he was a good, really decent husband and father. And I realized I had no idea how to put thoughts in this man's head. I had no idea what a guy would be thinking in all of these various situations, at work, at home, with his wife, with his kids. And initially, I just started interviewing a couple of guy friends. You know, if we were out to dinner, I'd describe a scene, and I would say, you know, if this was you, what would you as a guy be thinking in this situation? And I found myself just shocked, honestly. And I realized as I started to talk more and more to these guys that there is an awful lot going on in the inner lives of men that women just aren't aware of, that we just don't know about. So that's what really led me to realizing I need to do a lot more of this research, and it needs to be in its own book.
And the rest of the book tells that story, tells what you discovered. Can you just throw out a few of those for us?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, I basically, some of the things that I found about how men think are, you know, just for example, one of the most fundamental pieces is that we women in our romantic relationship with our husband, you know, we most want to feel loved. And so we assume that that's what our husband most wants, and that's what we work towards. You know, we say, I love you all the time to him, and we try to do loving things. We have no idea that that's not what he most needs. And that actually, I ended up doing a big survey for the book to sort of kind of prove some of these things to women, and found out that 3 out of 4 men said they'd actually give up feeling that their wife loved them if they had to, if they could just feel that she respected them. And so the primary need that men have is to feel that their wife, you know, respects them and believes in them and trusts them. And that's so much more important than feeling loved. So that's a big difference between men and women.
Well, I'm holding your book right now in my hand, and I have it turned open to chapter 9. It's called Words for Your Heart, What Your Man Most Wishes You Knew About Him. And it's actually pretty surprising what you wrote about, what you discovered. Would you tell us about that? Give us a preview.
Yeah, at the very end of the survey, I gave the men a blank space, and I said, okay, we've had all these multiple choice questions, but, you know, you tell me in your own words, what's the one most important thing that you wish your wife knew, but you feel you can't explain to her or tell her? And I thought that what I would get would be sort of a sense of the most important problem, you know? What's the thing we most miss about him that, you know, that is causing him grief? And instead, what I got from the men, the top answer by far, was the one most important thing I wish my wife knew is how much I love her. And it blew me away. And I've seen that now over these last, you know, 5-6 years, just how incredibly deeply most men do feel about their wife, and, you know, or if they're dating, you know, in a serious relationship, about their girlfriend, and just feel handicapped at getting that across to us in a way that we can believe.
And Shanti, why do you feel, or what have you found, is the reason that women don't know that?
Well, what I found is actually what Jeff, my husband, and I put in the companion's book, and for men only, is the reason for that is basically that underneath that totally confident surface, you know, of many women, and underneath that, you know, even in a woman in a great relationship, there is this underground sort of subconscious insecurity that constantly is asking the question, you know, do you love me, honey? Are we okay? And really, honestly, what it is this sort of underground insecurity. You know, would he choose me all over again? And it's very different from men. I mean, the men I interviewed said that once they get married, they don't really think about that anymore. You know, they don't question whether their wife loves them. But what I tell the guys is there is no switch in a woman's brain that gets flipped to the, oh, now I feel permanently loved position. Women have to be reassured of that on a daily basis, basically. And guys just don't know that.
In this last chapter, and I just want to probe a little bit deeper in this, you talk about the difference between mediocrity and great, and how possibly a wife might help her husband get to that level. Could you just kind of go there, how a mate can help a man become a great man?
You know, this is something that so many women misunderstand. I've had so many women over the years in the conferences that I do and the speaking engagements, like what I did in Albuquerque a while back, you know, ask the question of, you know, my husband just seems like he's kind of mediocre. You know, he's not motivated. He just sits around the house all day. And, you know, I try to get him to step out and he won't. And one of the things that so many women don't realize is that whether he does or doesn't is so often dependent on how you as a woman respond to him and whether you make him believe that you believe in him. It is absolutely backwards from what most women think. And the reason for it, and this was a big surprise to me personally, I didn't know how much under the surface these confident-looking men have a lot of self-doubt. I had no idea that so many men were looking to their wife as sort of the most important person in their life, the one who knows them the best, for the answer to the question of, do I measure up? And having a doubt about whether they measure up. Most women have no idea. And so that doubt can really keep a man from becoming all that he is supposed to be. But man, when a wife sort of clicks into understanding that and sees and is able to sort of see the signals of where that's happening, it makes a ton of difference to whether the man steps out into being the man that God intended him to be. It's a huge difference often.
It is amazing. I'll just testify that to hear my wife's approval or joy is the most meaningful opinion of anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that women have heard, I think many women have probably heard that, you know, just how meaningful it is, just how much, you know, a guy appreciates hearing, you know, you go for it or whatever. I don't think most women realize what's underneath that. They just sort of think, well, yeah, everybody likes appreciation. Okay. So what's the big deal? And they don't realize, no, it's not appreciation. It's answering this deep question that the guy has of, do I measure up? Am I okay? Am I doing a good job as a husband? Am I doing a good job as a father? Do I have any idea what I'm doing? Because they secretly doubt all of those things about themselves.
So it's not just the female that needs the reaffirmation. You're saying the husband, the male, needs as much.
Oh, yeah. Or honestly, even more. Because I think this is a very uniquely male insecurity that so wants to be the husband and the father, for example, that she needs, and absolutely doubts that he has any idea what he's doing.
Well, that's
so that's a big thing for a woman to help him step out in that.
Well, and it's revolutionary. What you just said, a lot of people do not realize. They have been programmed to think, oh, yes, I have to reaffirm my wife, but I don't need that. Or the wife thinks maybe my husband doesn't require that because of the exterior that is displayed. But there's that deep, deep need inside, isn't there?
Oh, it's huge. And this is the thing, honestly. I tell women all the time that we kind of joke about it. I hate to say this, but, you know, women have these jokes like, you know, he looks so confident in himself, he might be a little too confident in himself. He might need to be taken down a peg or two. And that's I have overheard that now, and God help me, I used to say that. And because that's what we think is going on inside you. And what most women are missing, and I think it is most women. I really, truly do. I think that this is the vast majority of women. is that we don't realize that he's got, we think you've got this inflated view of yourself and we're just bringing you down to ground level. Hmm. We don't realize that most men are actually privately inside. They're starting below ground level when it comes to sort of their view of themselves and do I know what I'm doing and is someone going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. They're starting, and if that's true, that they really have this self-doubt, they don't need someone to take them down even more. They need someone to build them up and to be able to say, you know, thank you, honey. You go. You can do it. I believe in you. And it's revolutionary to women once our eyes are opened to that, because it is very hard for us to believe it, given what's on the outside. But once we actually understand that that could be in there and start looking for it, oh, man, I can tell you from personal experience, you know, we as women, we'll see the confirmation of it everywhere if we just recognize it.
A little heartfelt encouragement goes a long way.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Well, again, because it's not just what everybody needs, which is everyone needs affirmations. It's not just that. It really is answering the self-doubt that he secretly has.
Shanti, one of the hot topics today is the economy. And it's interesting that you worked on Capitol Hill and on Wall Street, so you're familiar with those arenas.
Oh, yeah.
but no matter what is the pressing national issue, there's always the deeper relational issues. And it seems that no matter what is going on in our nation, relationships are a hot topic. And why is it? Why is it that we have so much trouble maintaining good relationships?
You know what? I'll give you my honest answer to that, because I think we could probably have 10 different people in a room and I'll have kind of 10 different opinions on that. I have seen it goes all the way back to, you know, if you want to sort of develop this from kind of a biblical perspective of looking at what the Bible says, there's this passage in Genesis that talks about the fact that there's confusion placed between man and woman, and there's this sort of both of them kind of wanted to get their own way and were kind of selfish, and it ended up being, unfortunately, a pattern that has been perpetuated now for thousands of years. And I think we all kind of subconsciously know that we have a tendency to be kind of selfish. And what I've seen in my own life and now in thousands of other women as I've gone around the country and talked about this and in men, is that I think both the man and the woman in general in relationships, we do honestly start out with goodwill towards each other. You know, I've seen so many husbands that have goodwill towards the wife, and I've seen so many wives who have goodwill towards their husbands, you know, sort of in general, but they don't realize that even though they're kind of trying, they're trying really hard in the wrong areas because they have no idea what the other person most needs. And so we're really working at cross odds. We don't communicate very well. We have a tendency to be selfish. And frankly, we just don't know what the other person needs.
Shanti, how long have you and Jeff been married?
14 years.
Okay, 14 years. So I don't want to give the wrong impression to our listeners that you haven't had any kind of hardships in your own relationships because you guys have this wired. You've worked through your own stuff, haven't you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's the whole reason why the books were needed. I think really one of the differences, honestly, with the research that we ended up doing and the reason that they have touched the nerve is that because we're not the typical people that write marriage books. You know, we're not marriage counselors. We are not therapists. We're not psychologists. We're not pastors. We don't have any of the usual kind of psychology kind of credentials. We were just an average husband and wife, as my husband puts it. He was just the average semi-confused husband. And what happened was when my eyes were opened to this because of doing this research for this novel, and asking men, you know, what would you be thinking if you were my male character in this scene? What I realized is, wow, this is really surprising information. This is what the average non-psychologist wife doesn't get, because I didn't know it. But the difference is that I happen to have this analytical training. I did work on Capitol Hill. I do have a graduate degree that's very analytical, and I did work on Wall Street, and so I was able to take those same analytical skills that I used to apply to large Japanese banks and apply them to men and understand how you guys are thinking and be able to do a survey about it and figure out what was true and, you know, what wasn't and, you know, put it all in hopefully a form that the average wife like me could understand. And again, just dealing with the things we don't get. If it was something that most women kind already knew, or on the men's book, it was something that most men kind already knew, there was no room for it. I'm not a psychologist. I couldn't cover the waterfront. I just wanted to deal with the stuff that we miss.
I want to talk about pain and what to do with it. Just for a second, I've worked with people for years, and I meet people who would say, bottom line, life hurts. I've been hurt by someone. They carry pain because of it, and that can result in bitterness and unforgiveness.
Yeah.
So give advice to those people who are listening to this about that.
You know, this is one of these areas that I can only tell you what Jeff and I have seen. As we've gone around the country in these last 4 or 5 years, we've done a lot of marriage conferences, and we've talked to a lot of people like that. You know, even though we're not counselors, but again, coming at it from this kind of analytical perspective. And one of the things that we have seen that makes an enormous difference is if they can just, for just a moment, kind of set aside their hurt and their maybe understandable hurt, and whatever bitterness they might have, which could very well be understandable, if they can set it aside for just a minute and instead approach that other person with this idea that that other person probably had goodwill towards them and wanted to or wants to be the man or the woman that they need. You know, for example, the wife that's been hurt by the husband. If you will set aside your hurt for just a minute and believe that he probably desperately wants to be the man that you need, but he just doesn't know how, and he sort of feels like everything he tries isn't good enough or it's not hitting the mark, and he's getting just as desperate or hurt or confused and feeling just as perplexed and, you know, hopeless on his side, but he desperately wants to be the man that you need. For example, if you believe that he has goodwill towards you, it starts to change how you view the hurt that you received, because you don't think of it suddenly as malicious and he knew that this was what I needed and he did it, you know, he did this just to hurt me. Because if that's true, then it's kind of understandable that you'd get bitter. I mean, you have to deal with the whole issue of forgiveness at that point. And that may be what some people do need to do, that they do need to be... There probably are people who need to be willing to forgive any purposeful hurt that has happened.
And forgiveness is a choice, but you're saying it can become a feeling.
Well, one of the things that we deal with a lot in the books, and truly, I mean, one of the things that I've seen in the ministry over the years, is that most of us think that we feel a certain way, and so we act a certain way, right? You know, that our feeling, that our actions kind of follow our feelings. And what I've realized is that actually a much more healthy approach, and honestly one that I think is the way we're created to be, is the other way around. And that we have to decide what the right action is to do and do it, regardless of whether we feel it. And if we do that action over and over again, the feelings are going to follow. I mean, if you, for example, I said earlier, one of the things we women don't realize is that our man needs to feel respected even more than he needs to feel that we love him. Suppose that, well, I don't respect him. You know, suppose that that's the feeling that we have inside as a woman. Well, you know what? You can still act respectful. You can still approach him respectfully. You can still force yourself to not respond critically. You can still force yourself to not tease him in public, as tempted as you may be to do that, and instead speak kindly, and instead say, you know, I will choose to defer to you, honey. I'm gonna trust you on this one. If the more you do that, you can almost guarantee that your feelings of respect are gonna get better. But the more you criticize, and the more you tear him down, and the more you focus, maybe understandably, on some of the areas that are an issue, the more dissatisfied you're gonna be. It's just gonna work that way.
So in a relationship, we need to make choice the engine and feelings the caboose, that one will pull the other. If the right choices are made, the right feelings will come.
Wow, I like that analogy. That's a great analogy.
Well,
mind if I steal that?
No, it's yours. You know, you do travel and you speak a lot, and you've been on Fox News and PBS and TNT and Focus on the Family, and you write a weekly column for newspapers. So your message gets out on a number of fronts. And what I want you to do, because I know it's been well received, but can you tell us a specific story about a person or couple that has responded and what you've seen in their lives?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that's the most unbelievable sort of sweet reward from the Lord, really, for all the sort of time that gets put in, is seeing these lives changed. You know, and again, changed not, you know, because this is, to me, this isn't because of me or because of Jeff. It's because of God opening somebody's eyes. Basically, let me give you an example of one of the very, very first stories that I heard way back when the book first came out, because it's such a perfect example of so many others that I've heard since then. And that is, there was a woman who, she and her husband had been married for a few years. They had a young baby. Things were going absolutely downhill. The husband had a pornography problem, and she also was responding to him in ways that were tearing him down without her realizing that that was what was happening. And finally, they came to a breaking point. She took the baby and left and flew across the country, intending to divorce her husband, and moved in with her parents. And about, I guess, maybe 2 months later or something like that, it was her husband's 30th birthday, and she decided to bring the baby back so he could see the baby and, you know, basically pick up the last of her stuff and have that be sort of their final goodbye. And one of her friends had told her about the book For Women Only and had said, you have to read this book, yeah, whatever. But she was at the airport to come back waiting for a flight and saw the book in an airport bookstore. And so she said, okay, fine, I'll get it. She said she read it on the plane, and this is her words to me. She said, it rocked my world. And I realized that so many of the things that I thought were just his problem, that there were so many areas that were mine. There were so many areas that I had been tearing him down without realizing it. You know, obviously there were things he had to deal with too, obviously. But she had no idea just how difficult she was making it for him to deal with those issues. And she said she got off the plane. She told her husband, is this true? You know, she read the book to him in snatches over that weekend. And he said, this is exactly it, but I couldn't put it into words. It's so hard, you know, for guys to kind of articulate what they're feeling. And at the end of that weekend, she got back on the plane. She got her stuff from her parents' house, and she and the baby moved back to be together with her husband. And they are so strong today. And it was just such an exam. They have another child and another one on the way, actually. And it was such a sweet example of something as simple as just having the right information, just having our eyes opened to things we just didn't know. And I've seen the exact same kind of reaction on the men's side with things that they just didn't know that they didn't know about their wives.
Boy, I can hear it in your voice, Shanti. You live for those kind of testimonies, don't you?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I mean, for you as a pastor, you see this sort of life change, and it keeps you going because you see how much it's not about us. You know, you see how incredible it is to watch the Lord change a life.
Shanti, people are people. I mean, redeemed people, unredeemed people, everybody struggles with these kind of problems. So what resources do believers have that unbelievers don't? What would make the difference?
Well, to me, the thing that was so eye-opening and enlightening for me, because I wasn't always a believer in Christ. I came to know the Lord when I was an adult. I was 21 years old, and I was just about getting ready to graduate from college, and I had already had a worldview formed at that point, like a lot of people, and so I didn't realize how much I was missing. And when I finally did come to Christ, I attended, and then when I started to do years later this research, I realized that one of the things that we have available as believers is that all of this stuff that I'm talking about in these books, it's all there in the Bible. It is all there in God's written word, in his living word, to in sort of enlighten us on these issues. And the problem is just that so often we just don't see it, or sometimes we don't want to see it, and it's kind of hard. But to me, one of the things that I've found is that every single time that I speak, every single time I do a women's event, I start with one question, and it relates to the second thing that we have as believers that is a big deal. And I've even seen God change the lives of unbelievers in this way and sort of start them on a really interesting journey. And that is, I stand up and I ask the women, I say, I've realized we have so much inaccurate information in our heads. We have so many wrong ideas rattling around in our brain about how men are wired. Are you willing to give God permission to open your eyes to those things?
Beautiful.
And are you willing to give him permission to change your mind if there's any areas that need to be changed?
Mm-hmm.
And that work of the Lord in our life has been so impactful. And I think that is what has made the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can literally stand up on stage and I can watch God opening that woman's eyes and that woman's eyes. And I can see, ding, the light bulb go on over their head. And it's the most amazing thing because it has nothing to do with me. And that's, I think, the thing that to me is the most important about what we have as believers is we can go to the creator of man and say, help me understand this. Change my mind where it's wrong. And he will.
Your pace, your journey is a pretty fast one. In fact, the literature I was reading about it is, you call it life at warp speed.
Yeah.
So how do you balance all of the demand, the writing, the speaking, and how does that affect your personal relationships?
You know, it is so interesting you ask that, because right now, in the middle of writing a Bible study about that very thing, and one of the things that is so easy for women today, especially who have tons of opportunities. You know, most women, we have opportunities that could never have been imagined in biblical times, for example. And so one of the things I've had to do is to try to dig out of the Bible the clues about how I'm wired as a woman and what I'm created for in order to help me balance this sort of warp speed life. And that's one of the things that I realize is there are clues about the things that are the most important, and sort of prioritizing those things and making sure that I'm not giving short shrift, for example, to the Genesis calling to leave and cleave with my husband, or to be fruitful and multiply, and to be able to still be a mom to my kids, that those have to be the ultimate sort of things that I prioritize, and everything else in my schedule gets worked around making sure that those are taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be really hard. I know a lot of women listening probably totally understand what I'm saying, but I've also found that, you know, with the help of an absolutely wonderful husband and the support, that I just wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing without him, that with that, God makes a way for it to work.
Okay, one final question. Peer into the future with me, Shanti. It's a new year, a new day. There are new challenges. What concerns do you have as a Christian leader, an author, a mother? What concerns do you have about the future of the family in America?
To me, the most important thing, it may be a little bit different from what other people who are policymakers and that kind of thing are currently thinking, but one of the things that I've seen over the years as I've analyzed some of this, frankly, in my sort of policy analysis background, is that so many, actually almost all of our social problems all stem from the decline of the family as sort of something that the culture gives honor to and works to protect, and that our policies are designed to encourage. For example, it's something like 91%. I don't know, have the exact number in front of me, but it's a huge number. 91% or thereabouts of those who are in jail say that they did not have a close relationship mm-hmm. with a father figure on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis. And that's not a coincidence. It's because when we have a breakdown of the family, it leads to all these other things that otherwise probably wouldn't have happened. And so as a policy analyst, because that's my background, I have a master's in public policy. As a policy analyst, I am really concerned that as a culture, we have got to be so much more proactive about helping the family rather than allowing its decline. And you know what? There's certain things that we as average Americans can do. You know, I mean, we've all probably heard of those things, you know, encouraging our elected representatives and that kind of stuff. But there's other things that we can do that are like what we're talking about right here, bringing awareness to things that will strengthen the family in our own world, even if we can't do as much about what they're doing in Washington, for example. Mm-hmm. And these day-to-day things in our little universe, our community, I think are often just as important. It's really easy to sort of push it off to the big guys and recognize and not recognize that we have just as much responsibility and ability here. So that's my encouragement.
Shanti Feldhahn, thank you for joining us on The Connection. We loved what you had to say. It's challenging to all of us. God bless you.
Thank you.